5 o'clock hour, the Burns and Gambo show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. We pointed this out yesterday. Kellen Olson, in writing up about the game yesterday, pointed this out on ArizonaSports.com as well. DeAndre Ayton, through the first 11 games, had 7 dunks. Last night alone, he had 5. Now, the Suns still lost, so Ayton dunking wasn't the difference between winning and losing. But for those of us who have longed to see a more aggressive DeAndre Ayton, a more fierce DeAndre Ayton, we got it last night. We absolutely saw it. Is it here to stay? Is this the new version of DeAndre Ayton, what we saw last night?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think he could play like that. It's, you know, it's efficient. I mean, it's smarter basketball. Instead of settling for a fadeaway jump shot or passing it out to the three-point line when you got the ball right there and you got one guy defending you, take the ball out of the basket. Be aggressive. Use some moves. Go around people. He went around that Tillman guy like he wasn't even there and had the reverse dunk. And I mean, I would have brought the house down if that was a home game here. Would have brought the house down. Yep. It was just a great play. So I think that he's very capable of it, but I still, you know, I'm of the belief he's 22. Bigs take a long time to develop. Be patient. But you know this, Bernsey. Nobody wants to be patient. They want it now. They want it right now. They want the golden goose. They can't wait for DeAndre. He can't develop. But Luka. But Luka's great right now. And I want DeAndre to be great right now. And he was a first round pick. He was the number one overall pick. He can't be just really good. He needs to be a superstar. But, so that's the thing. There's no patience with many, many of the fans on DeAndre's development.
No, I would agree there's a lack of patience. I think the more sophisticated Phoenix Suns fan has gotten beyond comparing DeAndre Ayton to Luka Doncic. At least I know I have. That ship for me had sailed a long time ago. It's Luka's Luka. He is one of the best players in the NBA, and while DeAndre Ayton might one day make that a conversation again in terms of who the better player was, for now, it's not even a conversation worth having. What I want to see is DeAndre Ayton do, I want to see him not settle. I forget about the comps to Luka Doncic. I want to see DeAndre Ayton not settle. I want to see him not settle for kicking the ball out or not settle for a 15-foot fadeaway jump shot. I want to see him not settle with not taking the ball to the rim. I want to see him use all of this remarkable physical ability that he's been given to its fullest conclusion, you know, and not go 60% of the way, 70% of the way. If he uses everything he's got 100% of the way, he still might not be as good as Luka Doncic, but at least he'll be maximizing his own value. That to me, Gambo, has been the frustrating part about DeAndre Ayton, is you just know there's so much more there than what he's been doing. You know it. I know. Everybody knows it. Chris Paul knows it. Monty Williams knows it. That's why they've been encouraging him to do more, because he's only been scratching the surface of what he's capable of, and that has been the very frustrating part watching DeAndre Ayton play.
I mean, I get it. I mean, I talked last week about how elite of a defensive rebounder he is. He's one of the best defensive rebounders in the game. He had 16 rebounds yesterday. So he's a good rebounder. Like, he's good. You need that. I mean, they need that. They need his rebounding. The offense, the scoring, yeah, I mean, you take a lot of the pressure off of everybody else. And if he could score inside, then much less reliant on the three. And then we don't have to continue to say they live and die by the three. Because if they're able to pound the ball low and get some easy baskets and free throws and stuff like that with him, it's a nice option to have. It's a luxury. I mean, it's a luxury to have that. Now, with the Luka stuff, listen, Luka's the better player now. Someday, and this is what I would, you know, I would say you hope for. You hope that within the next 5 years, the Suns win a championship. And you can be like, okay, DeAndre Ayton has a championship. Luka may be the better player, but DeAndre's a really good player on a championship team. And maybe the Suns don't win a championship without DeAndre. And that's when maybe people will, you know, if you're not the sophisticated Suns fan. If you're not a sophisticated Suns fan like Bernsey.
Well, no. I didn't mean it like that. I just meant, you're right. That sounded kind of elitist. I wasn't.
No, but that's how you are. A little uppity, you know. smart guy.
No.
Guy
you're
in the room.
You're right.
Ooh, I went to college.
Yeah. I got a degree.
College. Yeah. Went to all three state colleges.
You went to one college? I went to three. Yeah.
He's a sophisticated Suns fan. And many of you, you're not. You're not a sophisticated Suns fan like Bernsey. I mean, he's been around for a long time.
I will agree. I probably had that coming after what I said. I wasn't trying to be a little. I just meant, I guess what I meant was that the Luka argument is so old. I mean, it's let's stop comparing DeAndre Ayton to Luka Doncic. There's no, let's compare DeAndre Ayton to DeAndre Ayton. You know, let's compare, and I know that, boy, that's a thick piece right there, but let's compare DeAndre Ayton to himself. The version we saw of Ayton last night, that's the version I want to see.
Sure.
That's the version, whether he's ever as good as Luka Doncic, it doesn't matter to me anymore whether he's as good, because he doesn't need to be as good as Luka Doncic is for this to be successful for the Phoenix Suns. He doesn't have to be a better player than Luka Doncic for this to work out for the Phoenix Suns. He needs to be closer to the version he was last night for this to work out. Luka's irrelevant to the conversation to me anymore. That's sort of what I meant by it. And as long as he plays to that level of aggression last night, I think the Phoenix Suns will be just fine with DeAndre Ayton when it's all said and done. Just don't settle. Don't settle for jump shots. Don't settle for being soft on the offensive end. Be a force. Be aggressive. Be, you know, make them deal with you. And that's something that Ayton just hasn't done enough of. Luka or no Luka.
Sarah, Cody, are you guys sophisticated Suns fans like Bernsey?
I mean, I don't know if I can call myself sophisticated. I think somebody else has to do that for me.
Yeah. Just curious if you're a sophisticated Suns fan.
I will say, as I speak, my pinky is in the air, so I guess make your own judgment.
I only went to one state university.
Oh, yeah. So you're probably not as sophisticated as a Suns fan as Bernsey is. No. You only went to one.
I deserve this.
I don't even know what what's the opposite of sophisticated? Because that's whatever that
you?
Is, that's what we are.
Oh!
You?
Me?
Yeah. Yeah, you're the opposite of sophisticated.
That's fine. I'll take that. Yeah. I'm looking at it now. Unsophisticated, boorish, ingenuous. I'm an ingenuous Suns fan. I'm a tacky Suns fan.
Trash Suns fan.
I'm a clumsy Suns fan. I'm an uncomplicated Suns fan.
You are an uncomplicated Suns fan.
I'm an uncultured Suns fan. There it is. Are you a sophisticated Suns fan like Bernsey or an uncultured Suns fan like me?
This is great. One word. One word. It was one word.
Listen, you want to use big words like that.
Do it at your own risk, right? You know what? I should know better. If I'm going to use big words like sophisticated, do so at my own risk. Monty Williams, this is the whole point of this segment, by the way, was to play all this great Monty Williams stuff I have about DeAndre Ayton. Can I play it, please? Just to
I'm a no-frills or vulgar Suns fan. I'm a graceless Suns fan.
Definitely vulgar.
Graceless.
Somebody has discovered synonym.com.
Unrefined. I'm an unrefined Suns fan. There's a whole list of them right here.
I'm sure there are. Monty Williams is a fan of the aggressive DeAndre Ayton, like we saw last night. Here's what he told Bickley and Murata earlier today on where exactly that aggressiveness came from.
You know, it comes from him just humbling himself and listening to a lot of people talk to him about, you know, his talent level and his ability and how he has to apply it. He's been on the floor with Devin, Chris, and Jay after every practice, and they've been really talking to him about his footwork and pick and rolls, his ability to do what he did last night. And he's been humble enough to listen and apply it.
He's been humble enough to listen and to apply it. In other words, he has accepted that there are flaws to his game. He's accepted there are things that he's got to get better at, and he's humble enough to learn from guys like Chris Paul and Jay Crowder and Devin Booker and even a coach like Monty Williams, which is absolutely what has to happen if DeAndre Ayton is going to take this step that the sophisticated or the unsophisticated Suns fan is going to want him to take. Without that humility, he doesn't take it, Gambo. He doesn't get where we need him to go.
You know, if he has games like this on, if 7 or 8 out of the games he plays, he's able to contribute like this, nobody's ever going to have a problem with DeAndre Ayton, and all of that Luka Doncic stuff is, you know, is going to subside to a certain degree, because DeAndre's always going to rebound, you know, more than Luka, and you know he should block shots more than Luka, and
sure,
but he's not
sure.
going to have more assists than Luka, and he's not going to have more steals than Luka, and he's not going to have more points than Luka. But if he has more offensive rebounds and more defensive rebounds, and he can score, and he's got a good free throw percentage, and he blocks shots, and you know, it's not that it evens out, because it probably may never even out, but it could get to the point where it's not, you know, it's not a concern for people anymore. He's got to help them win. That's what he has to do. He has to help them win basketball games. And yesterday, you know, he did a lot to help them win the basketball game. Unfortunately, Devin Booker couldn't hit the broadside of a barn yesterday.
Yeah, no, he could not. And that was, like we said yesterday, if he has even an average Devin Booker game, they win that game yesterday. Just an average Booker game. When we come back, Kyler Murray headed into his third season in the NFL. And if you look at some of the quarterback comps, you could argue very much so. This is the make it or break it year for him and the Cardinals. And we'll explain why next on the Burns and Gambo Show. I think most of us would agree next year, this year, is the year for the Arizona Cardinals. And barring some unforeseen catastrophe, an injury, something that none of us want to think about, losing some key player for a very long period of time. Assuming everything is relatively normal for the Cardinals, they have to make the playoffs this year. And if they don't, I think it's reasonable to assume that there are going to be widespread changes within the organization. I mean, it's just, and that sucks, but that's life. That's life in the NFL. You go from 3 to 5 to 8 wins. You start 5-2, you start 6-3, you don't make the playoffs in year two, and you're expected to do that in year three. And then you see, and I thought this is my favorite thing that we've talked about today. You see the story on Revenge of the Birds, in which they've looked at the current notable quarterbacks who got to the playoffs by their third year in the league. And if Kyler Murray doesn't get there by his third year in the league, it doesn't mean he won't in the fourth. It doesn't mean he won't be a good quarterback. But even average quarterbacks have gotten there by their third year. And if he doesn't, we're going to really start to wonder what's wrong with them. And if we're being more specific, what's wrong with him by not getting there by his third year?
Yeah, I don't know if the third year is the telltale sign, but I think it's a good indicator. I mean, that list of quarterbacks is a lot of the good quarterbacks in that league, outside of like Mitchell Trubisky, who got there within 3 years, are on that list. A lot of good quarterbacks. It's a long list. I won't go over it again. I did it earlier, but it's a long list of quarterbacks that are on there. And you would think after 3 years that if you are a good quarterback, if you're an elite quarterback, that 3 years, you should be able to get your team to the playoffs within 3 years. The quarterback is ultimately, you know, if the quarterback's really good, he can overcome a weak football team or a team that doesn't have a lot of skill position players or a team that can't run the ball they could rely more on the quarterback. So if Kyler's all that in a bag of chips, then I would think by next year he'll have this team turn in the corner and in the playoffs.
Some of the quarter, and I won't read the whole list either, but some of the quarterbacks on this list are just okay. Kirk Cousins, Teddy Bridgewater, Andy Dalton, Marcus Mariota. You mentioned Trubisky. He's on the list. Jared Goff took his team to a Super Bowl, for goodness sakes. I mean, some of these are the elite quarterbacks of the NFL, to be sure, but some of them are just okay. Now, guys who didn't, guys who failed to get to the playoffs after 3 years in the NFL, Jameis Winston didn't do it. Blaine Gabbert, Sam Darnold, Jake Locker, Johnny Manziel, Blake Bortles. Not that 3 years is like the end-all, be-all line when it comes to, you know, defining even a good quarterback. But I think safe to say, if we're sitting here a year from now, January 19th, 2022, we're sitting here a year from now, Gambo, and we're having conversation about Kyler Murray going into year four without having taken his team to the playoffs, I think it'll be very fair and very reasonable to have a conversation about whether he's truly the franchise quarterback the Cardinals need moving forward. I think that will be a conversation we'll have if he plays most of the games this upcoming season and doesn't lead them to the playoffs, we're going to have that conversation a year from now, I promise you.
Yeah. Yeah, because there comes a point where you've got to determine what you have with everybody. You know, like the Jets have to determine what do they have in Sam Darnold right now, and the Giants have to determine what they have in Daniel Jones right now. And, you know, the Chargers feel really good about Herbert, and Cincinnati really likes Burrow, and Baltimore likes Lamar, and you know, Washington moved on from Haskins. That's it. You're done. You're done. Off-field things and then not being – I mean, if Haskins was any good, they wouldn't have cut him.
No.
They wouldn't have cut Dwayne Haskins if he was a good football player.
Nope.
Dallas has to make a decision on Dak. I think they're going to keep him. I think they'll spend a lot of money on him. But then we talk about these teams that keep these quarterbacks for a long time, and, you know, sometimes you make a mistake by holding on to Jay Cutler forever or Matthew Stafford forever. Sometimes you make that mistake, and I think teams are wising up to that, and they'd rather just try something different if they've got a guy that is an average to below-average quarterback and not pay him a lot of money to be an average to below-average quarterback.
And that's the thing, especially with that big payday looming for Kyler Murray. I mean, we're at the most 3 years away from it, right? He's got 2 years left on his deal plus the fifth-year option for being a first-round pick. We're at the most 3 years away from financially a big decision on Kyler Murray. And look, none of this is meant to, at least from my standpoint, and I think you feel the same way, to express doubt about Kyler Murray. I think he's a franchise quarterback in this league. I think he's the quarterback of the future for the Cardinals in every way, shape, and form. And as you've said many, many times over the course of the season, man, it's only a matter of time until Kyler Murray's making $40 million a year. I hope so, because it means he's good. It means he's taking them to the playoffs. It means he's winning a lot of games. It means he's established himself as the franchise quarterback. If none of that happens next year, you know, then it's almost like you're starting all over again with this organization, wondering, do they have the guy, and do they have the guy they want to pay, and are they still looking for their next franchise quarterback? All of those things will, and it just enhances the pressure that everybody is going to be under in that organization in 2021. This is a, for all of them, Cliff and Steve and Kyler and DeAndre and this is the year for the Arizona Cardinals organization. If they don't make it this year, it's
going to look a lot
different.
It's
going to be a tumultuous offseason for them this time a year from now if they don't make the postseason.
Yeah, it's going to look a lot different. A year from right now, it'll look a lot different if they do not have a good year. If they flop and they go down and they don't continue to get better, I think it'll look a lot different. Now, you know, the one, I think no matter what, Kyler's still here. I do. I think no matter what, Kyler's still here. I don't think even if you don't make the play, I don't think they're going to give up on Kyler Murray. He has shown enough good things in his first 2 years to where this isn't a make-or-break year for Kyler. But I think what it is I think it's a make-or-break year for the direction that they're going under Kyler. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does. It's a make-or-break year
for the direction.
Yeah, for the direction, in that knowing, okay, we've got the guy or we don't. If he gets them to the playoffs this year, you'll go, okay, they've got their guy. If they don't make the playoffs this year, you'll wonder, do they have their guy? You know, that it'll still be an open-ended question if they don't make it this year. If they do, the question is answered. They got their guy. He's their franchise quarterback. In. Get ready to pay him. Get ready to give him all the money because he's taking him back to the promised land. But if they don't, it still remains an open-ended question about whether you've got your guy or not. And that's something everybody would like to avoid with
right.
the team. There's no doubt about it.
But before they determined that he's not the guy, I think they would give somebody else an opportunity to see if he's the guy.
Yes. See if he responds to different leadership. To a different voice, different coaching,
different system. Offense.
But a different system. Yeah, a different offense, a different way of going about things. And that's why I still remember, I don't know, it just stands out to me as clear as day. You and I doing a crosstalk with Bickley and Murata at some point during the season. I think it was after a loss. I can't remember which game. And the four of us were talking. And I think I said something like, look, at this point, I have five times as many doubts about Cliff as I do about Kyler. Like, I'm still pretty sure, and I still feel this way. I'm pretty sure Kyler is the guy. I'm really sure Kyler is the guy. I'm still not so sure Cliff is the guy to get the best out of Kyler. You know, I am not convinced that Cliff is the guy to get the best out of Kyler.
Cliff has to get the best out of himself before he can get the best out of Kyler. Cliff has to do a better job of play calling and clock management and all of that stuff to help Kyler be more successful. So I think that's what Cliff's job is. He's got to become better. And if he becomes better, then Kyler automatically becomes better.
Yeah, I like that. That's good. Yeah. Cliff's got to get better at Cliff before he gets better at Kyler. Yeah, I like that. That's good stuff. Coming up, this time a year ago, the Phoenix Suns got off to a great start, and they faded. And when they got off to a great start this year, we talked about them not fading this year. Are they fading, or is this just a blip? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Nicole, it certainly throws off your rhythm when you've been playing a lot and then you have to stop playing for a whole week. But we're no excuses, no explanation team. You know, we're not going to make excuses about not playing. It shouldn't affect your reads on defense. It shouldn't affect how hard you play. You know, I get missing shots, but I thought there were way too many missed reads tonight on defense where we gave up threes at the end of the clock and then breakdowns on the ball. You know, that's stuff that you can control. And so, yeah, not playing for a week can throw your rhythm off as far as making shots. And the cardio might not be where it should be, but that can't affect everything.
No, and that's what Monty said last night. He reiterated again today when he was on Bickley and Murata. We are a no-excuses team. But to look at the five losses they have so far this year is frustrating because you see where 7-5 could be with 9-3, 10-2. They lost to the Pistons, they're 3-10. The Wizards, they're 3-8. Sacramento is 5-9. Memphis is 7-6, but I think looking at the roster they kind of put out there last night, that was a very winnable game. And then the Clippers, and that was the game they fell behind by 30 points and ended up cutting it to, what was it, 1-3-4? I can't remember exactly what the...
They cut it to 1.
Did they cut that game to 1? Yeah, that's what I thought they did. Yep. Yeah, so their losses have not been the type that go, okay, well, that's a... You know what? They lost to a decent team. They've lost to a lot of bad teams so far this year.
Yeah, and that's disturbing. I don't know if it's alarming or concerning. It's just disturbing. Like, if you want to be elite, the best teams win those games. You'll lose one on occasion. But the best teams beat the teams that they're supposed to beat. And right now, the Suns have a bunch of losses to teams. Now, we haven't been in this position in a long time. Let's remember. It's been a long time since the Phoenix Suns have been in a position where we could say, yeah, they should beat that team. Because the Suns have sucked for a long time.
It's such a good point.
Yeah. We haven't been in a position. How many years has it been since we've been able to say, yeah, they should beat that team. Yeah, they should win that game, and they should win that game, and they should win that game. Because they're better than them. We haven't been there in a long time. So we just, you know, we looked at the early start to the season, the addition of Chris Paul, 8-0 in the bubble, and we automatically assumed that they should beat these teams. Maybe we're right, maybe we're wrong, I don't know. But they haven't done it, and that's the indication that's what you need to know about where the Suns are. The Suns are a decent team. They're nothing more than a decent team right now, and that's the truth, because they've lost to Detroit, and they lost to Washington, and they lost to Sacramento, and they lost to Memphis, and if they were better than a decent team, they would be winning these games. That's, in a nutshell, that's what it is.
Yeah, and I do think you bring up a really good point, and one that I've thought about a little bit, in that it's been so long since we've expected this team to win games, expected them to be good. You can't... As much as you want to get it all back at once, it doesn't always work that way, right? Like, our expectation level, it's so funny. As fans, as media, as whatever, man, we're coming off a five-year run where our expectations of the Suns were, on a scale of 1 to 10, we were at a 2, right? We had no expectations of the Suns. We were hoping they'd win 30 basketball games, right?
We were looking at the draft.
Right, exactly. And okay, where are they? Let's get some ping pong balls, baby, and let's tank, and let's look at tankathon.com. Well, how quickly we've gone from running simulated lotteries at tankathon.com to just assuming that you're good enough to beat the Memphis Grizzlies, or assuming that you're good enough to beat the Washington Wizards. Now, that's not saying that the Suns that we should be okay with them losing those games. We shouldn't. They're a better basketball team than those teams, but you're not going to get it all back at once. And you can't expect to go from an organization that languished and suffered for five straight years and just think that over the course of five or six games...
That you're better than everybody.
That you fixed everything.
I'm better than
that
you now.
I'm better than you now because I've got Chris Paul and I went 8-0 in the bubble and we got off to a good start this year. Great. So what? Whoop-de-doo. For the last 5 years, you were lucky to win 25 basketball games. Don't tell me about how you're one of the elite in the league. Show me. And I think maybe we all thought it would just happen sooner than it has. And that's on us for our expectations of this
team. Well, what's one of the first things we said about this season after they went 8-0 in the bubble and after they got Chris Paul and Jay Crowder? Nobody's going to take you lightly anymore. Like, yeah, they're going to show up to play you.
Yes.
So it doesn't matter. You don't get the benefit of having a team, you know, think that you're a sorry-ass basketball team and they're not going to come in and play hard. Okay, you got some respect now. You went 8-0 in the bubble. You got a little bit of respect. You don't have a ton, you got a little bit of respect. So these teams are going to play you hard. A win against the Suns is, that's a good win because everybody's talking about how good the Suns are. So you beat them. That was a good win for Washington. That was a good win for Detroit. That was a good win last night for Memphis. So now you're a good win. So you're not going to be taken lightly anymore.
No, it's an excellent way of looking at it. And that's something that they're going to have to get used to. And that's something that maybe Devin Booker in particular is going to have to get used to. And I think something else that that they're all getting used to, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, I think they're all getting used to having Chris Paul on the roster with them. They're not that's got to be an adjustment, right? And not that they're nervous because they're on the court with Chris Paul, but they're all still so young. DeAndre Ayton's still young. Devin Booker's been in this league a few years, but he's still a young guy. You went from a team filled with a bunch of kids where you were lucky to win 25-30 games a year, and now you're sharing a court with a first ballot Hall of Fame guy in Chris Paul, one of the best point guards the league has seen in the last 30 years. That's going to take some getting used to for everybody. And for even a bunch of alpha males like NBA players, I would imagine they want to defer a little bit to Chris Paul. Hey, you're the Hall of Famer. You're the all-everything guy. What do you want us to do? We're going to lead you. And in the middle of all of that, everybody's still adjusting to everybody. Again, doesn't mean they shouldn't be beating teams that they should be beating. The Rockets on Wednesday, prime example. That's not a great basketball team. They've gone through a lot of stuff the last 9 or 10 days or so. You've got to beat that team. You've got to beat that team on Wednesday if you're going to be everything that you think you can be. But I can understand why it's all still very new to them. Chris Paul, pressure, expectations, it's all very new for this organization.
Yeah, and you get to the point where, like, okay, you know, is there a point in this season where it's not new and you guys got to start meshing and there's no more, okay, well, it's new. I mean, is it 20 games? Might be 20 games to me. I mean, it sounds like a pretty good, you know, that's more than 25% of the season for a 72-game season. So, you know, that could be a good mark right there where you want to start seeing it. Maybe it's sooner. I mean, you never know when it's going to come. They had a week where they didn't play, and they haven't had a lot of practices, and they lost to Memphis last night in a game you thought they were going to win. So now you've got this game against you. I'll tell you what, you lose that Houston game, and we might have some concerns there. I mean, there is going to be a point, too. We're looking at it just the positive. Okay, they're going to mesh. They're going to go on a run. They're going to win 5-6 games in a row. They're going to beat Houston. They're going to beat Oklahoma City. They're going to gel together. You know, there could come a point, too, where you start, if you lose any more of these games that you're supposed to win, where there could be a major concern about whether they make the playoffs or not.
I'm not there yet, but I understand why you bring that up. Because this time a year, not exactly this time a year ago, but relative to the start of the season, last year's Phoenix Suns team got off to a really good start. They were 5-2. They were 7-4. They were the talk of the league. And I remember, Gambo, you and I having conversations a week and a half ago. Okay, here's why this year is different. Here's why this year isn't last year for this Suns team. And we pointed out the depth and the veteran leadership and all the injuries that they suffered a year ago. Man, last year's team, after that hot start, they lost 16 of their next 20 games. And I don't think this team would do that, but I hope this team's slump doesn't get so extended that it makes us wonder if that great start was fake. You know, like last year's great start was, it was kind of fake, right? I mean, they did it and it wasn't real. It wasn't who they really were. They ended up kind of revealing their true nature over the course of the rest of the season. I hope we're not saying the same thing about this year's team. I hope they don't play so poorly in the next couple of weeks that we're wondering, was that first week and a half of the season, was that real? Was that who they really were, or is this who they really are? I hope we don't have that conversation about
it. I would think that there's too much talent there. I would think, but, you know, in order for that to happen, Booker's got to play better, and Paul's got to play better, and that starting lineup's got to play better. So, I mean, Monty should have never gotten to the point where he had to change the starting lineup. That should have never happened. Chris Paul and Devin Booker in the backcourt, DeAndre Ayton and Jay Crowder and Mikal Bridges up front, Monty shouldn't have had to change that starting lineup. That starting lineup should be good. That's a good starting lineup.
Yep.
So the fact that he had to make a change, that's disappointing.
Yep, no doubt. Coming up, the Kansas City Chiefs. We don't know yet who their starting quarterback is going to be Sunday against the Bills in the AFC title game. Does that give them even the slightest bit of advantage? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. All right, time for the Coors Light What's On Tonight. The games that we are going to watch this evening are brought to you by our friends at Coors Light. It's a light night in the association tonight, Gambo. Two games, although they're all involving Western Conference teams, and they're mostly Western Conference teams. We expect to be direct competitors to the Phoenix Suns, so maybe that's a reason to watch tonight.
Sure.
Thunder Nuggets tonight. And then the Pelicans and the Jazz tonight. Those are the two games that are on tap. There are NHL games as well, college basketball games tonight as well. The Coyotes aren't playing tonight after losing last night to the Vegas Golden Knights. They had 2-0 lead in that game, and they blew
they
it.
Did. Man. They did. They just just gave it up late and then gave up the empty netter, and that's a good Vegas team. They played strong. They played hard. But, yeah, Vegas is a good team. They got to play three more times in a row. I mean, that's just that's tough.
Yeah, it's just a weird schedule in the NHL this year. I'm not totally familiar with the Coyote schedule, but if I remember right, it's like they had two against San Jose to start the season and then four against Vegas. And then after that, every single team they'll play in like back-to-back games, right? They'll play two games against this team, two games against that. And that's how the rest of the schedule will be, just to minimize travel and kind of compress it a little bit.
Yes.
So it'll be a very strange schedule for the Coyotes. And, yeah, four straight against Vegas is no good.
Yeah, Darcy, they got the win with Ronta the other night. You know, Ronta was very good in that second San Jose game. Because they had lost the first one. So Kemper, two games with Kemper so far, they don't have a win. They lost in a shootout, and then they lost last night. They had the lead, but they gave it up late and then gave up the empty netter. So they'll go back and forth, but I think a good sign is that Ronta played well against San Jose, because, you know, with the short season and cramming all these games in, you're going to have to rely on your backup goalie quite a bit.
All right, just real quick before we talk about this Bills-Chiefs game coming up, Tom Pelissero of the NFL Network tweeted this out about an hour ago, and I tagged it so I could bring it up the next time we came around to it. NFL Players Association Executive Director Demora Smith told agents on a conference call tonight that there is no, quote, rosy outlook, close quote, on widespread vaccinations of players by August, and that OTAs and minicamps likely will be virtual again in 2021.
Wow.
We are
Seriously?
Planning. Yeah, quote,
by
we're
August?
Planning for an by August. We're planning
oh,
for an off
God.
Season that looks a lot like the 2020 off season.
And who is this that reported this?
This is Tom Pelissero of the NFL Network.
This is just discouraging.
This is from Demora Smith, who is the NFLPA executive director. He was on a conference call with agents. And he said, yeah, widespread vaccinations of players by August? Probably not, which
why?
Means OTAs and minicamps will be virtual again. I don't know why. I don't know why. Yeah,
I mean, but maybe. August is eight months away. You can't have a vaccine. Let me jump in. Barkley said something about how athletes should go to the front of the line, which is ridiculous and stupid.
Ridiculous, yeah.
But, like, you could get vaccinations. You know, I think the elderly get a priority right now, and I think our governor, Ducey, put something out. I think I read that today about, you know, there are places you can go and you can sign up, and I think I was reading it, you know, even if you're not signed up, you still might be able to get it the same day. So, I mean, more and more people are getting vaccinated. I can't believe by August you wouldn't be able to have everybody vaccinated. I can't buy that.
It is beyond my ability to know one way or another, because I'm not paying attention to it like others are paying attention to it as closely. So I don't want to speak from a position of saying something that I don't know anything about. But I would tend to agree on a very basic kind of level. It would be hard for me to believe too that by August we still wouldn't have the vaccinations necessary. That I agree with you basically. It's just hard to believe that by August we'd still be in a situation where we wouldn't have enough vaccinations to allow mini camps and training camp to happen the way it normally would. But again, I'm just telling you what Demora Smith is warning agents out there, that this off season for the NFL could look a lot like last off season did in the NFL. And something we already talked about, we brought this up yesterday, but for anybody in our audience who wasn't with us, the scouting combine scrapped, not happening this year, at least not the way we're used to it being. They're going to figure out a way to get the medicals done. The NFL is asking individual college campuses to run their pro days similar to the NFL would have run, how they would have run the scouting combine. Because there are going to be no on-field workouts in Indianapolis. There are going to be no medical checks in Indianapolis. Right. It's all going to be localized so that there's not one scouting combine. So that's, you know, that was really, when you think about it, that was the last normal event for the NFL before everything shut down.
The scouting combine?
That was in late February. That happened as normal, and then everything after that stopped. Scouting combine's usually the third or fourth week of February, and that was the last normal thing the NFL did before everything stopped in 2020.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I keep this little folder in my drawer that I saved from the week, and I think I showed it to you once, or I've talked about it a couple times. I've saved it for my kid. You know, how coronavirus affected sports in 2020. And the first date is March 11th, which is less than 2 months away for us. I mean, we're less than 2 months away from that, you know, that first day where it's just okay. And, you know, so we're 10 plus months on this now, Bernsie, with the sports world going crazy.
It is going to be a year in a hot minute.
I know.
I mean, we'll
7 weeks.
We will blink and we're going to be a year out from that day. And I think as long as I live, I don't think I will ever forget the details about March 11th and where I was when I found out and what I was doing and everything that happened that day and getting off the phone with you, being on the phone with Luke Lipinski, who's coming up next with the rundown and all of
us. I was on his show that night, yep.
I was on his show that night. I mean, we all were, right? Because it was just like, we were in uncharted territory. It's hard to believe that was nearly a year ago. And it's even harder to believe that a year later, I mean, you've got the executive director of the Players Association warning player agents, probably not going to be any different this offseason than it was last offseason. That's just crazy.
I don't know why I did it, but I printed out like a week's worth of, you know, what I sent to you. That March 11th day, that was the Suns lost to the Blazers 121-105. Booker had 29 points. Baines was 1 of 7. Steve Nash did a sit-down interview with Devin Booker. The emails that we send to each other about what we're going to talk about, what we want to talk about, I actually kept a week's worth from that time frame.
Yep, it was a time I don't think we'll ever forget. So we'll see. We'll see what ends up happening with sports as we know it, and whether there's a normal to get back to. I have absolutely no idea. I do know this, that's pretty much going to do it for us here on this edition of the Burns and Gambo Show. As I mentioned, the rundown with Luke Lipinski is next. We'll see you tomorrow at 2 o'clock here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Have a great night, everyone.